Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island, pairing beer and music since 1988. Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago, Illinois. Listen critically, enjoy responsibly.
You're listening to Sound Opinions, and later in the show, we're going to talk with the host of the Slow Burn podcast, Joel Anderson, about a subject he has covered extensively, the murders of Tupac Shakur and the Notorious B.I.G. But first, our favorite performances by musicians in movies.
Absolutely, Greg. The Oscars are just around the corner, and this business of musicians on film is a common one. From the beginning of popular music, we've seen musicians also taking a starring role on the silver screen, including Tupac, who we'll talk about later. It's only natural, I think, for a musician to branch out into film because so much of popular music is creating this persona, this larger-than-life persona on stage. It's already acting, and then so to take that in front of the cameras just makes sense. Think about Ziggy Stardust or Sasha Fierce or Janelle Monáe's Arc Android. In acting roles, some artists even play a version of themselves, and that's usually a mixed bag about how well they do. I think when they're stretching what they are on stage into something different but related, that's when they're at their best. Anyway, we're each going to share four of our favorite performances, and Mr. Cott, you are up first.
Thank you, Jim. I am going to go right to the Queen of Soul. One of my first thoughts when we discussed this topic was her performance, if you can call it a performance, is really Aretha being Aretha.
In the Blues Brothers.
Exactly. One of the great musical movies of all time.
It is.
You know, you can't say a lot about the plot, okay?
What
some
plot?
Some of the comedy is still really great. Some of it hasn't held up so well. But the musical performances in this movie are altogether astounding and still are. What I appreciate most about the Blues Brothers, it was made in 1980, 40 years later, is that what a lift it gave to the careers of James Brown and Ray Charles and Cab Calloway and John Lee Hooker, who weren't really talked about much back then, and ended up having great, you know, second or third careers after this movie came out because it put them in a new context for a new legion of listeners. Aretha, of course, benefited from that as well. Soon after, she ended up having a string of hits, getting back on the charts for the first time in like a decade. And the other thing you got to point out is that backing band of this the Blues Brothers.
Cropper and Dunn.
I mean, what a group of guys. Matt Guitar Murphy, who happens to play the husband of Aretha Franklin in this particular movie and gets a lot of what for from Aretha when the boys are putting, let's get the band back together, man, and save the orphanage. Matt Guitar Murphy, great guitar player, is the guitar player in that band. He's working at this diner. And Aretha, the choreography essentially is her wagging her finger in her pink house slippers at this guy and saying, you better think before you make this decision,
right.
Singing one of her most iconic songs. It's Aretha being Aretha. You know, sometimes she had the reputation of being a little remote. She's anything but remote in this performance. From the Blues Brothers, Aretha Franklin on Sound Opinions.
You better think about what you're saying. You better think about the consequences of your actions.
Oh, shut up, woman.
You better think.
That's Aretha Franklin with her role in the Blues Brothers. Truly memorable, Jim.
Yeah, Aretha is singing. Aretha's being Aretha. I'm going to turn for one of my first choices to two musicians who are not singing. It is not a musical performance, except they're perfect in it. It's a perfect movie, let's face it. Who doesn't love The Big Lebowski? Joel and Ethan Coen's amazing film. I was going to say about. How do you say what the Big Lebowski is about? I don't know what it's about. It's just the Big Lebowski. It's in a category of its own. Every single time I'm flipping on cable and it comes on, I get sucked in anew. Must be 100 times I'm up to now. But two musicians, one of whom is a friend of Sound Opinions. Frequently, she's been on the show, Amy Mann.
But can you save me? Come on, save me.
She plays Nihilist Woman and Flea. The bassist from the Red Hot Chili Peppers, of course, plays Nihilist Number 2. And what you have to understand is there's this gang of nihilists, which are essentially like dour-faced punks who negate and hate everything, who plot this fake kidnapping of a very wealthy woman in order to extort money from her husband. Amy is so devoted to this cause as Nihilist Woman that she allows her green nail-polished little toe to be amputated as proof of life of this woman. Amy doesn't have a lot of lines in this movie, Greg, but there is a memorable scene where she's sitting with her gang of nihilist pals in the diner after sacrificing her toe. And you can see that because the boot has been altered to show us that the toe's missing.
Lincoln Valley Pancake.
Steve Hicks and Blanket.
Für mich auch Heidelbeer Pfannkuchen.
Heidelbeer
Pfannkuchen.
She has Lingonberger Pancakes.
Oh Mann, wenn ich da an Pfannkuchen in Bremen denke.
Ja, ja, was ist dann mit?
Das ist einfach besser, da ist richtige Butter dran, nicht so ein Scheiß.
And Flea is Flea. I'm not the world's biggest Red Hot Chili Peppers fan. Flea is the least egregious of the Peppers, in my opinion. And then, of course, there's that great scene with the nihilists fighting our hero, Jeff Bridges, who is Lebowski, and his buddy, John Goodman. Poor Steve Buscemi. I don't mean to have a spoiler here, but God, the film came out in 1998. He's just had a heart attack. He's been scared to death, you know. And they're going and doing battle with the nihilists, and Flea gets hit really hard in the gut. They're just perfect goons in a cartoon way that the Coens have perfected. Here's a little bit of the nihilist gang in The Big Lebowski.
No, without a hostage, there is no ransom. That's what ransom is. Those are the rules.
His girlfriend gave up her toll.
She thought we'd been getting $1 million.
It's not fair.
Fair? Who's the nihilist around here, you bunch of crybabies?
Is there anybody who doesn't love The Big Lebowski, Greg?
Remember, that movie was not universally loved when it came out, but I think it's grown from cult favorite to, like, universally now recognized as one of their best movies.
Oh, from the very beginning of the Coens' careers, cool. I've been a huge fan. Joel and Ethan, come on Sound Opinions and talk music with us.
Totally. They get it. I'm going to go to Tom Waits next as one of my favorite musicians playing movie roles.
Those were days of roses.
I mean, the issue with Waits is which one do you pick? Because I particularly loved his role as that alcoholic limo driver in Robert Altman's Shortcuts, the way he plays off of Lily Tomlin in that movie. Mm. That pawn shop operator, a few lines in that Book of Eli movie with Denzel Washington that are just truly memorable. And there is a scene in this recent Robert Redford movie, I don't know if you've seen it, The Old Man and the Gun, which is worth the entire movie just by itself.
Where I have not seen that.
Waits just goes off for about 3 minutes telling this story near the end of the movie. That's
You're
hilarious.
You're a Waits groupie, so we need to take this with a grain of salt.
But I think his best role, or at least the most memorable one, just in terms of, wow, that's just like way out there. Because most of these characters are not normalized people, you know. They are living on the fringes of society. In Francis Ford Coppola's Bram Stoker's Dracula, Waits plays a character named Renfield. And Renfield is his doctor, apparently an intellectual, who also happens to be insane. And he's living in an insane asylum, subsisting on meals of insects because he says their blood gives me life. And He's waiting for his master to arrive. His master, of course, is Dracula. So he's being studied by one Dr. Seward, who is appropriately horrified not only by Renfield's diet, but his words. And Renfield gets really worked up because he knows he's being played by Stewart. He's just kind of being treated as this weirdo, and builds and builds into this rage in this one scene that we're going to play. Here is Tom Waits in the Francis Ford Coppola movie Bram Stoker's Dracula on Sound Opinions.
I beg you, a little sleek, a playful king, something I can teach, something I can feed. No one would refuse me a king.
Wouldn't you prefer a cat?
Oh, yes. A big cat. My salvation depends upon it.
Your salvation?
Yes. I need lives. I need lives for the master.
Master? What master?
The master will come. And he has promised to make me immortal.
How?
You know, Greg, Tom Waits, I'd forgotten he was even in that version of Dracula, which is not even my, like, sixth favorite version of Dracula. That is a bad movie. I mean, all I remember is Keanu Reeves
got Tom Waits. That's all
surrounded
you need.
By the trio or whatever of vampires. It's like, what? That's a bad movie.
Yeah, there's a lot of badness in it for sure. But Waits, again, steals the show. You remember his scene more than anyone else's.
All right, if you say so. I'm going to a great filmmaker, Jim Jarmusch, who has made astounding use of many great underground musicians, not household names, in all of his films. You know, John Lurie, he's cast Tom Waits. Members of the Wu-Tang Clan, Iggy Pop, is in this latest zombie movie, The Dead Don't Die, that Jarmusch released last year, his first film. He cast Richard Edson, who at that time was best known as the drummer in Sonic Youth, the first drummer, Stranger Than Paradise, way back in 1983. I think that set the mode for Jarmusch putting great musicians in his movies, in wonderful cameo character roles. But the best of all of them, I'm convinced, is Screamin' Jay Hawkins in 1989 in Mystery Train. You know, Screamin' Jay Hawkins, I think, is beloved by many fans of rock and roll, for I Put a Spell on You.
I put a spell on you. Because you're mine.
And then the vast majority of people, their knowledge drops off there. But Hawkins was always this super flamboyant character with the cape and emerging from a coffin and the skull cane in his hand, you know, way before or concurrent with James Brown doing it. And Hawkins, it was fascinating. I got to interview him once. And he was just a riveting storyteller, a character larger than life. And here he plays a desk clerk who is manning the front desk of the hotel with a young bellboy, Sinkay Lee, and they're kind of the comic connective thread of this whole film, which is essentially a collection of vignettes of crazy things happening in this hotel where none of the rooms have a TV, but they each have a portrait of Elvis, right? Now, to say that Screamin' Jay Hawkins steals the movie is saying something, because another great musician's in here too, Joe Strummer, you know. But it's Hawkins' day.
Well, I don't think you should eat that thing.
Yeah, you're probably right.
You gonna eat it?
No, I ain't gonna eat that thing. Hey, my plum.
All right, granted. You know, the dialogue is not amazing in that little clip. It's all about Hawkins' eyes. You know, they are so wide, and he just is, you're hypnotized by him.
Who knew he had a thing for plums? Now I know, you know.
Now we know.
What's your favorite performance by a musician in a film? I'm talking to you, our listeners. Call and leave a message on our hotline with your answer and why at 888-859-1800, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. After a break, Jim and I share more unforgettable turns by musicians in film. That's all coming up on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX.
out of bed and I stumble to the kitchen. Pour myself a cup of ambition and yawn and stretch and try to come to life. Jump in the shower and the blood starts pumping. Out on the street